The silver light from the enormous moon poured over them, blending with the golden quality of the day, flowing over the children, over Mrs. What's-It, over the mountain peak. "Now we will turn around," Mrs. What's-It said. And at the quality of her voice, Meg was afraid again. But when they turned, she saw nothing. Ahead of them was the thin, clear blue of sky. Below them, the rocks thrusting out of the shifting sea of white clouds. "Now we will wait," Mrs. What's-It said, "for sunset and moonset." Almost as she spoke, the light began to deepen, to darken. "I want to watch the moonset," Charles Wallace said. "No, child, do not turn around, any of you. Face out toward the dark. What I have to show you will be more visible then. Look ahead, straight ahead, as far as you can possibly look." Meg's eyes ached from the strain of looking and seeing nothing. Then, above the clouds which encircled the mountain, she seemed to see a shadow, a faint thing of darkness, so far off that she was scarcely sure she was really seeing it. Charles Wallace said, "What's that?"
"That sort of shadow out there," Calvin gestured.
"What is it? I don't like it."
"Watch," Mrs. What's-It commanded. It was a shadow, nothing but a shadow. It was not even as tangible as a cloud. Was it cast by something, or was it a thing in itself?
The sky darkened. The gold left the light, and they were surrounded by blue. Blue deepening until where there had been nothing but the evening sky, there was now a faint pulse of star, and then another, and another, and another. There were more stars than Meg had ever seen before. "The atmosphere is so thin here," Mrs. What's-It said as though in answer to her unasked question, "that it does not obscure your vision as it would at home. Now look. Look straight ahead." Meg looked. The dark shadow was still there. It had not lessened or dispersed with the coming of night, and where the shadow was, the stars were not visible. What could there be about a shadow that was so terrible that she knew there had never been before or ever would be again anything that would chill her with a fear that was beyond shuddering, beyond crying or screaming, beyond the possibility of comfort? Meg's hand, holding the blossoms, slowly dropped, and it seemed as though a knife gashed through her lungs. She gasped, but there was no air for her to breathe. Darkness glazed her eyes and mind, but as she started to fall into unconsciousness, her head dropped down into the flowers, which she was still clutching. And as she inhaled the fragrance of their purity, her mind and body revived, and she sat up again. The shadow was still there, dark and dreadful. Calvin held her hand strongly in his, but she felt neither strength nor reassurance in his touch. Beside her, a tremor went through Charles Wallace, but he sat very still. "He shouldn't be seeing this," Meg thought. "This is too much for so little a boy, no matter how different and extraordinary a little boy." Calvin turned, rejecting the dark thing that blotted out the light of the stars. "Make it go away, Mrs. What's-It," he whispered. "Make it go away. It's evil." Slowly the great creature turned around so that the shadow was behind them, so that they saw only the stars unobscured, the soft throb of starlight on the mountain, the descending circle of the great moon swiftly slipping over the horizon. Then, without a word from Mrs. What's-It, they were traveling downward, down, down. When they reached the corona of clouds, Mrs. What's-It said, "You can breathe without the flowers now, my children." Silence again. Not a word. It was as though the shadow had somehow reached out with its dark power and touched them so that they were incapable of speech. When they got back to the flowery field, bathed now in starlight and moonlight from another smaller, yellower rising moon, a little of the tenseness went out of their bodies, and they realized that the body of the beautiful creature on which they rode had been as rigid as theirs. With a graceful gesture, it dropped to the ground and folded its great wings. Charles Wallace was the first to slide off.
"Mrs. Who? Mrs. Which?" he called, and there was an immediate quivering in the air. Mrs. Who's familiar glasses gleamed at them. Mrs. Which appeared, too. But, as she had told the children, it was difficult for her to materialize completely.
and though there was the robe and peaked hat, May could look through them to mountain and stars. She slid off Mrs. Watsit's back and walked rather unsteadily after the long ride over to Mrs. Witch. "That dark thing we saw," she said, "is that what my father is fighting?"